This is KFSK's Midday Magazine for Friday, July the 1st. I'm Angela Denning. The U.S. Forest Service moved forward yesterday with plans to transition to second growth harvest on the Tongass National Forest within 16 years. The draft record of decision represents a compromise that won't leave anyone completely happy. KRBD's Lila Carey has more from Ketchikan.
Tongass Forest Supervisor Earl Stewart has chosen Alternative 5 for the proposed Tongass Land Management Plan amendment. What does that mean? Well, there's a lot of detail in the draft record of decision, but the main point is that during the transition, the U.S. Forest Service will offer an average of 46 million board feet of timber on the Tongass National Forest per year. For the first decade, that will include more old-growth logging than second growth, almost three times as much, but then, from years 11 to 15, the ratio will flip, allowing more young-growth harvest and limiting old growth. By year 16, timber stands offered for logging will be almost 100% young growth, with a few micro-sales of old growth for specialty products. Concurrent with Stewart's announcement was a flurry of news releases from various groups. Trout Unlimited Alaska likes the decision because it protects more salmon streams, but various conservation groups are unhappy and say that the transition should be faster. On the timber industry side, Owen Graham of the Alaska Forest Association says the transition needs to slow down.
We've always agreed that there needs to be a transition, but we wanted the trees to reach maturity, which is some 30 years in the future. If they cut the trees now over the next 10 to 15 years like they're talking about, then they'll be too small to be profitably sawn in the sawmills, and they'll just end up being exported to China.
Graham says that the old growth harvest planned during the transition isn't adequate to maintain the few remaining sawmills. He added that a full inventory of young growth trees is needed before formalizing the amendment.
To do this transition right now, like I say, it's purely politics and all the rubbish that people are making up saying it'll work. It's just that. It's just rubbish. They know perfectly well it won't work, and they don't care.
Dominic Della Sala, though, says it has worked in his state. He's a scientist with the Geos Institute in Ashland, Oregon, and also is unhappy with the draft record of decision, but his complaint is that the proposed transition is too slow and will not do enough to combat climate change.
And I think the Forest Service is missing an opportunity here because they're basing it on old school forestry and antiquated log processing techniques.
Della Sala, who advocates a transition within 5 years, says there are new technologies that will allow mills to operate profitably with young growth trees. He says mills that are willing to adapt can survive a transition. The Tongass Plan Amendment has been in the works for a few years, ever since Secretary of Agriculture Tom Vilsack directed the Forest Service to transition to young growth. Part of that process was the formation of the Tongass Advisory Committee, or TAC, a group of 15 representatives of Southeast conservation, tribal, and timber industry groups. Andrew Tomes of the Sitka Conservation Society was one of the TAC members representing environmental interests.
As a conservationist, I'd love to see the Forest Service get out of old growth right now. But our involvement in the advisory committee really followed this ethic of trying to figure out how to come up with a collaborative solution and make Tongass management work for all the stakeholder groups.
Tome says Alternative 5 protects high-value habitat and provides a roadmap for a full transition to young growth. He added that dissatisfaction on the part of some timber industry representatives and some conservation groups indicates that the decision is a true compromise. There has been some concern by Alaska's congressional delegation that the amendment is moving forward before a complete inventory of young growth is complete, and there is pending legislation to delay the transition. But Tongass Forest Supervisor Stewart says that is not an impediment. He says the Forest Service considered hundreds of thousands of comments on the issue, along with attack recommendations and input from scientists.
We believe we have enough information at this time to go forward with the first forest plan amendment, yet concurrently we will continue with the inventory for more on-the-ground project decisions.
And if that inventory shows there is not adequate young growth to support the industry, Stewart says there is flexibility within the Tongass Land Management Plan to evolve. Reporting in Ketchikan, I'm Layla Carey.
And there are links to the draft final environmental impact statement and record of decision along with this report on our website, kfsk.org. That link also provides information on how to comment. A final record of decision is expected by the end of the year. A geological exploration company is continuing their third year of drilling in the Stikine River watershed. Colorado Resources is drilling for high-grade gold on their KSP property near the former Johnny Mountain Mine. The property is about 74,000 acres. Colorado Resources CEO Adam Travis says the 247-acre drill site has been explored in the past.
A property like the KSP project has seen some work off and on from the 1960s and never been a mine. It's had some advanced exploration on it and has had some drill holes in the past.
Colorado Resources mapped more than 9,000 acres on the KSP property in 2014. Travis says this season's diamond drilling project will cost $2 million. He says they hope to sell any promising findings to a larger mining company. Colorado Resources also plans to explore another larger property known as Kingpin. The 81,000-acre property has not been explored since the 1980s. The exploration comes 1 year after Imperial Metals obtained its last permit to operate the Red Chris copper and gold mine, also in the Stikine River watershed. There was controversy over the risk of the mine's tailings dam's design. Red Chris began operating in 2015. This weekend, the public library will celebrate its recent landscaping, public art, and the opening of a new park for Petersburg with deep roots in the town's history. KFSK's Abby Collins has more.
Petersburg's borough librarian Tara Alcock says Saturday's event is a three-part celebration.
The first is to celebrate the opening of Centennial Park, which is a new park that's at the back of the library. The second is a celebration of the art and the artist that created the art in the library. And the third is just a general celebration of the landscaping, which is now complete.
Sue Paulson, president of the Friends of Petersburg Libraries, says it's going to be a great day. And it all starts on the Birch Street boardwalk that runs along Hammer Slough.
And it is there that we are going to meet up with Polly Lee and other members of her family and everyone else we can find that will love to attend here. And we're going to have a special ceremony to open Centennial Park.
The land for Centennial Park was given by Polly Lee and her late husband Elder in 2008. Alcock says Lee donated the land to the then-planned library project, though the library itself wasn't yet built.
It was amongst the first significant donations to the project, so it was really important at the time. It really launched us in a lot of ways.
The spot where Centennial Park was built was once the home of Harold and Monghild Lee, Polly Lee's eventual in-laws. According to Lee, her husband's father, Harold, came to Petersburg from Norway in 1902.
He built a bachelor shack in Hammer Slough. Then he built a boat called the Rival when he lived there in the bachelor shack. And then after a few years, Monghild Lee was encouraged by her family to come up here and help her sister, who was running a restaurant here.
Harold and Monghild later married and started a family on the property.
And Grandpa Lee enlarged the bachelor shack to be a nice little house on the slough. And then they had their family. Elder was born there.
According to Lee, the two were very involved in the town, in politics, and in the community.
Mama Lee became very involved in civic affairs, and she served on the library board for many years. She served on the school board for many years, and she served on the city council, first woman city councilman.
At one point, Lee says Harold and Monghild moved up the hill and away from the slough, but they still owned the original property. She says the land changed hands over time, but eventually came back to the Lees. Now, she says, she thinks Harold and Monghild would be delighted to see the land made into a public park and hopes the Petersburg community will enjoy the new space.
We're hoping that people will stroll through there for convenience and pleasure. It's designed and intended to be a park for the people, and we hope people will love it and care for it from now on.
Saturday's celebration doesn't end at the park, where Lee will cut the ceremonial ribbon and officially open the space. Paulson says the gathering will then move toward the library.
Then we'll climb the hill on the pathway of Centennial Park. At the summit, we'll meet a very good gardener, and she will lead us around the newly completed landscaping and talk a little bit about the plants that have made it look so very fine. And as we circle the building, we'll see the special areas in the outside of the library, because as you know, a building has an inside, but the outside can be a functional space as well.
From there, the celebration will move into the community room for a celebration of public art displayed around the building.
And there, everyone's invited to take a copy of the guide to the artwork. We're hoping the artists will be standing by inside the library to answer any questions, talk about their artwork.
According to Alcock, the funding for both the landscaping and Centennial Park came from a few different sources, a combination of state and local funding.
The landscaping and Centennial Park was funded by an appropriation from the state of Alaska, so it was money intended for the construction of the new library. And as well as donors, a lot of the plants that you see now being planted, this was all donations by individuals and businesses to the library project.
Alcock says Chelan Produce provided plants. Borough groundskeeper Jesse O'Connor worked on the new landscaping, and Reed Brothers did the rock work. She's thankful for the people and companies that made the projects a possibility.
We had a really great group of folks that came together to make this all happen, and I think they all deserve equal acknowledgement, because I think we couldn't have come out with such an amazing end product without all of them being a part of it.
A lot of work has already been completed at the library, and though it may seem like a polishing off of a finished product, Alcock says the work doesn't stop here.
Libraries are always evolving, so I'm not sure. Done. The most important part is done, the biggest part is done, but we'll continue to evolve and grow and improve it.
Alcock says in the next phase of work, the library hopes to build a covered shelter outside the building and to install some benches in the new park. They are also working with the Sitka-based master carver Tommy Joseph on building a new totem pole. In Petersburg, I'm Abby Collins.
The event will take place from 11 a.m. to noon tomorrow. Visitors are asked to gather on Birch Street Boardwalk at the entrance to Centennial Park a few minutes before 11. Petersburg's 4th of July celebration starts tomorrow and runs for 3 days this year, with many new offerings for all ages. From barbecues to dedications to a talent show to the old favorites, log rolling and street races, the Independence Day schedule should have something for everyone. Joe Vicknicki spoke with the organizers about what's planned.
Petersburg's weekend of events was put together this year by the Chamber of Commerce, Petersburg Parks and Recreation, and the Lighthouse Assembly of God Church, along with many businesses and individuals. Chamber of Commerce Director Mara Lutomsky explains.
So our committee kind of expanded. I know that in the recent years, it's been kind of Parks and Rec's thing. And now it's become a little bit more community-ish. We have a couple of new sponsors that have taken on events. The Lighthouse Church, Nathan Lopez at the Lighthouse Church, they are going to be kind of running all of the Sunday events on July 3rd. And so there will be a lot of new ones that people will want to look for and plan into their schedule that they haven't seen in the past.
The festivities kick off Saturday, July 2nd at 10 a.m. with a scrap fish derby from the North Harbor. There's also play on your own frisbee golf from 1 to 5 at the ball field on Saturday, and the community center is also hosting a celebration that day. Parks and Recreation's Heidi Cabral explains.
We do this every year, but this year is a little bit special. We have our 10-year aquatic center anniversary, and so the community center celebration is on the 2nd as well from 2 to 4. And of course, we'll have all the bounce houses up. We'll be doing a dive-in movie. We'll be having cake, sumo suits, all of it. So we hope everyone comes out and joins us and celebrates.
There's also the unveiling of the Eric Larson sculpture, Everything Starts with a Dream, at 5 Saturday at the Bushman Park, and a rib cook-off that day at Keto's Cave parking lot at 6. Then street booths open up Sunday and Monday, the 3rd and 4th. Sunday has a full schedule starting at 12:30 with a barbecue on Main Street. That's followed by a car and bike show that afternoon. Lighthouse Church pastor Nathan Lopez explains.
We're looking at custom cars. We're looking at just cool cars. We're looking at motorcycles. We're also looking at if you have a child that has a little, you know, a little car and you want to decorate up their car, that's one of the categories. And so we're going to have five different judges categories during that time. And so, yeah, it's going to be really exciting. And throughout the day as well, we're going to have a lot of random activities and things we're going to be doing. When there's a little free time, we're going to be doing, it's called the Cupid Shuffle. It's like going to be an old-fashioned dance-off. So
the Lighthouse Church is also organizing a talent competition at 12:45 Sunday, along with a photo scavenger hunt, a hoop shoot, other contests, along with a wing and hot pepper eating contest that day. Then Monday the 4th starts off with a color run walk with an 8 a.m. start at Sandy Beach Park. The parade is at 11 o'clock on the 4th, followed by KFSK's Kitty Carnival Games and the Money Pile. Then the afternoon brings a pie-eating contest, gunny sack races, and other street games. The Rotary Duck Race starts at 2, and the Fire Department's 5-alarm go-kart race is at 2:30. Starting at 3 on the 4th, there's a herring toss in Middle Harbor, followed by blindfold rowboat races. Then log rolling is at 5 o'clock in the Middle Harbor. Multiple raffles and donations help make the weekend happen. The Chamber's Lou Tomsky says there's still room for people to volunteer.
There are lots of ways that you can still be involved. The Chamber, of course, is looking for volunteers to man the booth. It's one of the most active booths during the 4th of July festivities because we are selling those $2 raffle tickets for the Alaska Airlines tickets and the cash, so you can take a big vacation. So we'll be selling those, and we need volunteers in order, you know, down there selling them and being right in the middle of the action.
The weekend wraps up with fireworks at 11 o'clock Monday night at the ball fields. In Petersburg, I'm Joe Vicknicki.
Well, it is Friday, July 1st, and that means it's time for our stocks report with Dan Berg. He's a financial advisor with Wells Fargo Advisors in Bellevue, Washington, and he's joining us by phone. Hi, Dan.
Angela, how are you today?
I'm pretty good. Oh, what's the news this week?
Well, we had an unexpected exit of Britain from the EU, or at least apparent exit. And what was equally as unexpected was the quick recovery of the financial markets. And so we had a brief couple of down days, and now we've had a fairly good week. In fact, a very strong week. However, a lot of the commentators are saying this is only the first act in a fairly long play, so don't be too optimistic. But the market had a good week. Part of it has to do with interest rates, and central banks across the world were saying, well, if we have some economic disruption, we're going to make money easier for longer, and interest rates did indeed shift lower. So I'm going to start with interest rates instead of the stock market today. The 30-year Treasury went down 0.2%, and now a 30-year Treasury bond in this country pays only 2.24%. These are getting toward historic lows, and the 10-year Treasury shifted down more than 0.1% to 1.45. And so things are going to stay lower for longer. That seems to be the consensus opinion. Also, the futures markets are telling us that the Federal Reserve, who was thinking about raising interest rates on the short end during the course of this year, may do nothing for the remainder of this year and maybe even for the entire next year of 2017. So lower for longer is the word. Rest of the economic news here in the U.S., we had some good manufacturing numbers. The ISM Manufacturing Survey, which is the most important one, showed a 53 reading, which is show modest expansion, which is good. Although the stronger dollar may give that a headwind in the future. And also we had the stress test, the second round of stress tests for major banks. You may remember after the financial crisis, there was a legislation called Dodd-Frank, and part of that legislation, there's an oversight board for so-called significant financial institutions, systemically significant, and those banks and financial institutions get graded, and they are able to raise their dividends and do stock buybacks depending upon the government's findings. Anyway, all of the American banks passed, and the two that failed were the European subsidiary. So that was some pretty good news for U.S. financial institutions. Over in the EU, which is where most of the news has been lately, The governor of the Bank of England is saying that he will be reducing rates and making money easier. And so interest rates in England actually went negative slightly for a 10-year bond during the course of this week. And the head of the European Central Bank is saying the same thing. And so that's affecting our markets, as we've discussed. And then over in Asia, we had yet another little hint of how China is really slowing down. Their manufacturing sector showed no expansion during the month of June. So for the closing of the week, the Dow Jones closed up nicely, up 550 points for the week to 17,949. The NASDAQ did even better. That closed at 4,862, a 3.3% gain on the week. And the S&P closed at 2,102 points, a 3.2% gain. So easy money was music to the ears of the stock market. Oil also recovered somewhat. West Texas for next month's delivery is now at $49.21. That was up about $1.60 for the week. And gold continues being a strong area of the market as people are hedging their bets. That's closing at $1,344 a share. That's up $24 an ounce during the course of this week.
And what a...
Go ahead.
I was going to ask you about individual stocks, if you wanted to touch on some of those.
Yeah, there were some interesting announcements. A couple of earnings reports, very few, one of which is ConAgra, symbol CAG, the large food company. They closed down to $48.39 this week. A large merger in the energy pipeline industry was called off on legal technicalities. Energy Transfer, symbol ETE, closed at $13.80. And Williams Companies, which was the company to be acquired, symbol WMB, closed down to 2056. A lot of investors own those for income. Also, General Electric, the government decided that they were no longer systemically important because they've sold most of their financial subsidiaries. So GE closed up to 3149. That should give them a little bit more financial flexibility. And Citigroup, one of the banks that did quite well on the stress test report, symbol C, that closed at 42.17, and Citigroup promptly announced that they were going to increase their dividend. And here in the Northwest, Micron Technology out of Boise, symbol MU, they are the large memory chip manufacturer. They swung to a loss, and that was at $12.46 at the close today. And finally, Alaska Airlines symbol ALK closed at 58.74. It wasn't that long ago that was above 80.
Thanks for that information. What about next week?
Well, next week is a four-day week because of the 4th of July, and it's a fairly light calendar. Among earnings reports, the two that are worth looking at would be Walgreens and Pepsi, if any listeners own those. And the main economic news will be the employment report on Friday.
All right. Well, thanks so much for that information and for joining us this week. We'll check back with you next Friday.
Thank you, Angela. Have a good weekend and a good 4th of July.
You too. Dan Berg is a financial advisor with Wells Fargo Advisors in Bellevue, Washington.
Listeners are reminded that the information provided is general in nature and may not apply to their personal investment situation. Individuals should consult with their chosen financial professional before making any decisions. Investment products and services are offered through Wells Fargo Advisors, LLC, member of SIPC. Neither Wells Fargo Advisors nor its financial professionals are legal or tax advisors.
This wraps up KFSK's Midday Magazine. I'm Angela Denning. Thanks for listening.